the Deputy British High Commissioner in Lagos, Ben Llewellyn Jones, OBE.
Thank you very much. Nice to see you.
I tried, didn't I?
You did very well. Very well.
It's so good to have you join us in the studio. You came pretty early too. I must applaud you.
Thank you very much. I'll be on time.
Great. So let's talk about the elections generally. I'm going to start from the presidential. I know that we had the EU observation team. We had the observers. We had the, I think, AU. We had the ECOWAS. But I'm sure the EU is the category you fall into, even though there's Brexit. But tell me what you saw as an insider, because I consider you an insider. You're in Lagos, so you also, one way or the other, observed the elections. What were your takeaways, your major takeaways from the elections?
So I've spent around 6 years in Nigeria. So I was in Abuja from 2014 to 2017. So I saw the elections then, not just in 2015, but the off-cycle elections. And since I've been back since 2020. So I know that for many people, particularly those who voted for the first time, there was disappointment or dismay or concerns. Mm-hmm. And quite rightly, people are raising those and taking those through the courts and trying to gather what they considered to be the evidence. But I actually saw, in terms of the accreditation process, with the use of the BVAS in that sense, a much more smooth process than I ever saw in 2015. And certainly, I think it, although voter turnout appeared low, I think it actually helped in many ways to get people to a point where one vote and one PVC were the same. So I think that was an encouraging thing. I think the large numbers of people who voted for the first time was a very encouraging thing. I think the fact that there are three major parties now involved, three major candidates at presidential level, is a really good thing for Nigerian democracy. It's very, very healthy indeed. So in spite of some of the disappointments, I was actually very encouraged by much of what we saw on the 25th. And I think the real challenge now for INEC is to try and improve in those aspects of process that were deficient, that were difficult, that were challenging, and where people were disappointed. And they have the opportunity now before the 11th to do that. We'd encourage, to do that.
The 18th, yes.
And we'd encourage and support them to do that.
Mm. Talking about these issues, the, teething problems, I don't consider them teething problems anymore because, INEC has had these problems recur over and over again. For an election where many people were promised, in fact, INEC promised people the best, billions were earmarked for this exercise. In fact, if INEC did ask for more money, it would have been given. Nigerians' expectations were raised to the roof. We saw people flying from outside the country to participate in this election. Couldn't we have seen better, especially with the introduction of technology? Just as you said, it was great to see that we could get accredited at the same time and vote. It made it very speedy. But couldn't these issues have been better handled by INEC from your perspective?
Well, I think INEC themselves admit that they would prefer to do better on the 18th. So the IREV, for example, we were equally concerned that the results should be uploaded as quickly as possible. And myself and others were talking to INEC at the time, trying to work through why there was a problem. So I think there are things like that very clearly would be better. I think it's always very challenging to organise an election in a country the size and scale of Nigeria. And some of the issues that we saw on the 25th, for example, large numbers of voters at one polling unit, very few at another, those are difficult to adjust to. But perhaps on the 18th, what we can see is perhaps better targeting by INEC of where resource needs to go, where there's going to be large numbers of voters. Perhaps we can also see the police and security forces understand where the potential risks and hotspots are. We'd really encourage that, that the lessons of the 25th can help us understand that. And I think for voters as well, that the lesson should not be if I vote, my candidate loses. The lesson should be if I vote, my vote can count. It can make a difference. And we saw, perhaps some very surprising results to some, at least, perhaps not to the candidates, but to some across Nigeria. And I think in a way that shows that the power and strength of democracy, not the kind of weaknesses. So, I think INEC certainly will try and improve. Absolutely, we encourage them to do that. But I think for voters, the message should be go and vote.
Because I don't know how many Nigerians you must have, polled to see their reactions to the last election. I do this every day and I get callers telling me every day I'm not going to vote. I think the first few days after the results were announced, half the time my callers would say, I'm not touching my PVC anymore. This is not worth it, And then I'm sure you saw the face of the lady who got macheted, but she still came out bravely to vote. And now she's being, held up as the poster child for democracy in Nigeria. How do we even begin to explain to those kinds of people that INEC, being led by Professor Mahmood Yakubu, who's somewhat a villain in the eyes of these people, can deliver on the 18th?
So, I mean, you know, to reach everyone in this way is very difficult. But I think, you know, democracy is a journey. Since 1999 to today, Nigeria's come an enormous distance very, very quickly. If you look back at the British democracy, we had a lot longer to move to the point we have, a lot longer, with many mistakes along the way and many challenges. So I'd say to people, be encouraged by the distance that's been travelled rather than the distance that yet is to be travelled, firstly. I mean, secondly, I mean, you know, it's people going out to vote that makes the difference to the outcome. And we've seen that. We've seen that with the results that came, that some of the more surprising results, perhaps. So to people who didn't get quite what they wanted, be encouraged by the fact that their vote could count, would count. Certainly in some places, it clearly made a massive difference. And I think for those people who feel threatened and at risk, and I understand that, I do. I think, you know, the security forces will be more aware this time, more alive to those risks. Certainly one of the advantages of an election in 2023 versus 1999 is a smartphone everywhere. Everyone's got some way of documenting, recording, and indeed kind of deterring. And just to say that, you know, we, the UK, said before the 25th of February that people who did the wrong thing, rigged or used violence or tried to voter suppress, we would ourselves look very hard at their own visa profile. We have a list. We're working through a list. We're working through evidence ourselves. And we're working very, very hard at what's going to happen on the 18th of March. And frankly, we really encourage politicians to do the right thing, not the wrong thing when it comes to that moment.
I will come back. I will circle around back to this particular issue because I want to talk about issue of hate speech. But let's talk about the elections again, February 25. Sorry, I have to keep going back.
Certainly.
Do you think that this was a credible election? I'm putting you in a hot on the hot spot.
No, I mean, ask the tough questions. I listen to you every day, so you do that. That's good. I mean, I think, so look, you know, the courts are going to test this, and quite rightly, at least two parties have gone to court to test this. So it's not for me to make a judgment. The court literally does make a judgment about this. What I would say is that, and they published their own report, but YAGA, the Parallel Voter Tabulation Group, showed the numbers that they saw. Only in two states did they see irregularities make a significant difference in those states, and not significant enough to affect the overall outcome in their view. Now, that's not a court judgment, so the court gets to judge this, but I can see that at the moment, INEC have declared His Excellency President-elect Tinubu President-elect. We congratulate him in that respect. He's been announced as the winner. If the courts choose to do something else, that's for the courts. But right now, I think it's important to follow the process and to respect it, to be honest. That's why there are elections. The rules have to be respected. Rule-bound societies really prosper in that kind of way.
Let's talk about democracy. I've studied the British system.
Yes.
It's a bit different from what we do. We're more tailored around the American system of government, which is also very complicated. But we see that you run a parliamentary system of sorts, and then that's why every now and again, you throw up somebody from, you know, the House of, what's it called now?
Commons.
Yes. So you have a Rishi Sunak now. We had Boris, and then we had the lady. What can we learn from how transparent? I love PMQs. It's my favorite thing to watch. I watch it on LBC. It's my favorite thing, and I like how people are made to be accountable, whether you like it or not, and you have to go back to your people. So I hear people say, well, I'm going to have to go back to my constituents to say this, that. But we don't see that happening in Nigeria. What can we learn from your system of government?
Well, I think, you know, not just from us, but from other sort of democracies that have had longer time, because obviously we're just one of a number of democracies. I think Prime Minister's questions is a brilliant thing. I remember a British Prime Minister talking to a US President about this, and the US President in question just looking horrified at the idea that every Tuesday you have to go along and you don't even know what the question's going to be.
Yes.
And that's the way it is. And I think it's a really healthy thing. I think, you know, accountability is really what that tries to show. And there are other aspects of British, American, other democracies that have that accountability. It's really important. So I think really keep asking the questions as voters. And this comes down to the issue of whether people should take money to vote. I mean, I know why they do. I understand it. People are in very, very difficult circumstances. But the truth is, if you take money from a politician to vote, they think they've done what they have to do for you. That's it. They've done. They gave you the money. You voted. See you in 4 years' time. So I really think that the accountability is the issue. It's, no, I don't want your money. I want you to build a better school, and not just a better school, but put teachers in it, make a healthcare system that works for me, do the things that I need for my children, for my future. And I've listened to a lot of voters over the years in Nigeria, and they want exactly the same things that voters want in the UK. They just want a better governed society with the kind of things that they need. So I think accountability comes from asking the tough questions and not stopping, to be honest, not expecting to be given no for an answer, just to keep going with the questions.
I like that the UK government, American government, and some other governments have continued to, you know, preach the message of democracy and hoping that people come out to vote and, you know, telling us what to do and what not to do in terms of the right things in, you know, for the electoral process. But somebody just sent me a message that is almost the question I want to ask. You say we should ask questions. In Nigeria, there's a big major problem with leadership. I know I'm not bringing you as a judge, but people ask questions. Half the time, they don't get answers. People demand, make demands on their leaders, and they don't get answers. For example, your prime minister or the people in the House of Commons are answerable to their people. In Nigeria, some of these people hardly come home to their constituents. So who are they asking questions? Who are they going to put on the hot seats? Whose feet are they supposed to hold to the fire when these people do not care to even, you know, say anything or come home to say, well, you sent me somewhere. I'm here to tell you what I've done so far.
So I think, I hope one of the positive things that comes from this election is not just engagement in the democratic process voting, but engagement thereafter in some of the excellent civil society groups that are here in Nigeria that are asking the questions. You know, budget, YAGA, these people don't stop when the election finishes. They actually go on to look at where the money's spent, who's spending what, and they put that kind of pressure. And I think the more people are involved, engaged in supporting them and raising their voice and making clear that these things are either unacceptable or indeed that their politicians are doing a good job, because it's not as if every politician's doing a bad job. We shouldn't smear everybody, right?
No.
You know, tend to focus on the negative. There are some, I think it's about getting engaged in the process after the election itself, not seeing it as a one moment thing. It is difficult. I don't say it's easy. I myself have been dismayed at times at the absence of answers sometimes from questions that are very reasonable that people have. But if I'm honest, it's the noise and the volume and the crescendo that I think is almost asking the question and going to get the answer. It just takes time.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the violence in some countries. I mean, you must have, you're following the elections. You've seen Lagos especially. You saw what happened in Rivers and a few pockets of violence in other places. But it's quite Lagos. We saw, I think, the most horrifying man and was shooting a regular point. And you go back to the lady who was attacked, you know, still was able to make it out to vote. What are we supposed to do to reduce the level of violence? Because for the longest time, I've known the democratic process in Nigeria. This is what bedevils us, the violence pre, during and after.
Yeah, so I was election observing on the 25th of February myself. I didn't see those incidents, but I know them, and we had teams in Rivers, not in Imo Partner here as well. I mean, it's very difficult to say that, but I think the security forces do have a role. I'd really be with the police state. It's not just a police officer who kind of box, which is an important thing to do, but the area around, but it's confident we'll have an area, confidence to step in and to respond to standards. And it's right, there's unarmed police officers, but it is possible for our police to intercept and get in and with a box out of three. I've been important to do so. So far, I think being an official opponent unit, they being a specific, it's incredibly hard. I have huge admiration for them. But I think if there could be more around the security zone, if you like, around the polling unit, that would make a huge difference to the confidence of voters. That's one concrete thing I could say.
Aside from just, you know, the armed violence, we also saw people who were intimidating voters. We saw certain people supporting certain political parties and politicians who were saying, especially in Lagos and Rivers, if you're not going to vote for so-and-so person, then you should go home. You're not allowed to vote. I'd just like to also ask you, do you know what the percentage of policing is in Nigeria? It's one police officer to 500 people. So again, as much as we're urging them, they do not have the manpower. So what do we do in the interim?
So I think this is where, you know, targeting comes down, right? I mean, there are certain parts of Lagos where we saw violence last time. There are certain parts of Rivers where we saw violence. I'm not saying it will be exactly the same places again, but taking a risk approach to these places, I think, is the best that can be done in those circumstances. As police, we saw civil defence, we saw other kinds of agencies out as well. It wasn't just the police. I mean, everyone has their own role, but we shouldn't just say it's the police. It's an inter-agency effort. And I know that the police are trying to affect that.
Yeah.
So I think it's about doing the best that can be done with the resources that are available. I mean, the policing numbers in the UK may be higher, but they're not massive, to be honest. But policing by consent is what we try to achieve. And that's, again, what people are trying to achieve in Nigeria. The other thing is, I saw people who were clearly being told to vote one way, and they just shrugged them off. And they just said, no, I'm good, thanks. You know, I don't know which way they voted, but they clearly weren't listening to the person whispering in their ear. And I think there's something very powerful about ignoring that and doing what you want to do and casting your vote in the way that you do. And the number of people I said to, you know, did you vote for who you wanted? Yes. I didn't ask them who they voted for. That's up to them. But they voted for who they wanted. So I think we should look at what people do when they choose to go into that ballot box. Often, whatever's been said to them before that moment, they do what they want to do. And that's the right thing.
Let's touch on something, because we have just 5 minutes on the clock before we go on our first break. Hate speech. And then I'll circle back to the policing system, because I know about the Met Police, so I know about how decentralized policing is in the UK. But let's talk about hate speech. It's been a thing, not just in Nigeria, but here in Lagos. Recently, we've seen crisis. We've seen certain people who work for the government also, you know, in the face of this, being front and center of these hate speeches. And I know you, between you and I, we know what the end product of things like this could be. Look at the Rwandan experience. Yeah. And in 2023, why do you think that politicians are towing this line?
So, I mean, why, I'm not sure. It's incredibly dangerous. I've been saying to everyone who listened to me this week, you know, if you look at London, we have a British Pakistani mayor, we have a British Indian prime minister, the British foreign secretary, my boss, his mother's from Sierra Leone. He went to see where she was born just the other week. You know, we're fine with this. You know, if I live in London, I'm a Londoner. And I think it's really, really, really important people move past this. Why is Lagos such an amazing place? It's not just because of its diversity. It's because of the strength of its diversity.
Yeah.
And I think all politicians should be appealing to people on the basis of their what they're going to do for them, not where they're from, not their ethnicity or indeed their religion. And I think there's a real responsibility, and I've said this very clearly to those that will listen, for those actions that are taken in their name. It's not enough to say don't do it. It's important to stop people from doing the wrong thing based on what you say. And I think it's paramount now in the week that we have, not just in Lagos but across Nigeria, that we don't allow this kind of ethnic dog whistle kind of moment to turn into something much more dangerous, and everyone has a responsibility to try and stop that.
Okay, well, in case you're just joining us, it's still the Morning Crossfire. I'm being joined in the studio by the Deputy High Commissioner, the British Deputy High Commissioner in Lagos, Ben Llewellyn Jones, and we're talking about the elections, of course, also looking forward to the March 18 governorship and Houses of Assembly elections across the country. And we've been looking at so many issues. I want to circle back to policing. I think I have 3 minutes on the clock. I know that the Scotland Yard, I think that's been moved somewhere again. Yeah.
It moves around.
Exactly. But tell us what we can learn from the policing system, because, again, in Nigeria, everything stops at the center. So if Abuja doesn't do something, then we're all, you know, in limbo. What can we learn from policing in the United Kingdom that can help us decentralize policing in Nigeria?
Well, there's different ways of doing this, and we shouldn't pretend the UK is the only way. And I'm very clear on that as well.
But
I mean, one thing I think is really important is community policing, knowing the community and the trust and confidence of the community. And if you look at some of the most difficult policing problems in the world, they're dealt with by people who know the community, what's happened, why, build trust, and therefore in a better position to prevent and investigate crime. I think that is challenging with the method of policing, the centralized policing that's in here in Nigeria, though I have huge admiration for the police, given the scale of the challenge they have in Nigeria. So I know there's an argument about state police. I don't think it's for me to really give a strong opinion on that. I think the key thing is for the kind of policing that emerges over the next 4 to 8 years to be much closer to the community, actually trying to police and working with them. So people feel really what they want.
I also know that every police around the world has its own problems. You know, I mean, you saw what happened during NSERS. It's about, you know, profiling. And partially, there's real profiling. There's even when, you know, with the stop and searches, I hear it on LBC when people say, oh, well, I was stopped because I was driving a Mercedes and I'm black, you know, and stuff like that. And for Nigeria, it's not, we don't have colors here. We're all the same. But then if you drive an expensive car or carry an expensive telephone, then you ultimately are a suspect. Do you think that the NSERS protest played a role in the way that Nigerians became bold, especially towards the elections?
I certainly think you see a lot of the kind of people who became politically active during the NSERS movement being engaged in politics now. And I think that's a good thing, actually. It's a good thing that young people, particularly young people from that moment or before that moment, have discovered that, you know, politics matters. And I think one of the good lessons, at least, was that you have to engage in the process. You have to have political parties, elections, in order to change things. You know, to protest is a good thing, but you've got to change through the existing legal process that is there. I mean, on profiling and so on, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a very difficult question.
Yeah.
I think the good thing, if you look at British police, is when there are problems, if somebody, for example, a police officer commits a crime, we don't hide that. We put them in prison and we talk about it, because accountability comes from being transparent. So I'd encourage that.
Okay. Well, Ben Llewellyn is in the studio. We'll take a break. When we come back, the phone lines will be open. If you have questions for him, join the conversation. Stay with us. Radio Station 99.3 Nigeria Info. I still have in the studio Ben Quillen Jones.
Very good.
Yeah, yes, I got it. He is the Deputy British High Commissioner in Lagos. And we've been talking about the elections and, of course, their observations and all that needs to be done to make sure that we have a free, fair and credible election come March 18. Now, the phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation. We have just 15 minutes on the clock. If you have questions, you got comments, 0700-993-993-993. If you're listening from outside the country, we're on Skype. We're Nigeria Info on Skype. And you can tweet at Nigeria Info with the hashtag MCF. That's Morning Crossfire. So I can see your tweet. And of course, you can send us a WhatsApp message so that we can make you part of this conversation. Now, before I went on the break, we talked about the issue of policing and hate speech. Now, you told us that we need to try as much as possible to get in front of that so it doesn't get out of hand. But I want to talk about relations between Nigeria and the United Kingdom and how long this has spanned for. And as it is right now, what are the other relations that we can benefit from as Nigeria? We know that you're supporters of democracy, you know, in Nigeria. But what are the, and then I know that a lot of Nigerians are schooling in the United Kingdom.
True.
And a few of them are on exchange programs. But what's been the relationship between Nigeria and the United Kingdom so far?
So, I mean, you know, we have such a deep relationship. So trade and investment, you know, huge amount of trade and investment businesses, British businesses here, both ways, actually. We just introduced a new developing country trading scheme, which takes away 90% of tariffs on goods that Nigeria would currently try to export to the UK. So really, really powerful future there as well in terms of trade and investment. So it's strong current trade and investment. We have a strong development program here in Nigeria where we're helping to grow Nigeria's economy, to help grow Nigeria's health system, to deal with education challenges, working alongside other donors, but a really, really strong and long development program that we have here. Mm-hmm. Of course, that we work in so many areas, not least to try and support policing, at least to try and work with Nigerian police around threats to the UK. And as you say, we have a strong kind of, you know, a large number of people traveling to and from the UK. To and from, I'd say, as well, because I know a lot of people talk about JAPA and people leaving, but actually, you see a lot of people coming in as well. So I think it is important. And I think the people-to-people links, really, when people think about the UK and Nigeria, they think, oh, countries, but actually it's the people-to-people links. It's the people who are familiar with the UK and indeed familiar with Nigeria, with music, with culture, with sport. So it's really, really deep and broad. It's really exciting, I think, in that way. And often people talk about the history, but I think the exciting future as well. I mean, young people today, they don't necessarily look back at those kind of historical moments. They look at the things that interest them now around sport, you know, Premier League, music and so on. So. It's strong, it's vibrant, and it's going to last, to be honest. You know, I think it's really good.
How do you feel when people say that the United Kingdom is like an extension of Lagos?
It is true. Certainly when you go to London, I mean, you come across so many Nigerians you chat to and so on. I mean, I mean, this is one of the things I was saying earlier. I think, you know, we celebrate our diversity in the UK. We do. Mm. I know that often people point to challenges and so on, but actually in London, I think, particularly in big cities and across other parts of the UK, you find many Nigerians, you find many people from India, you find many people who at least have origin and history in that respect. And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. It just makes the place what it is. And it's great, to be honest. It makes it exciting and interesting and not just diverse, but, you know, I think it's in that power of diversity that we move forward as well. You know, why do big cities do well? It's because they allow for that talent to come to the top. And I think it's really, Lagos is a good example of that.
0700-993-993-993. That's 0700-993-993-993. If you're a lady, call 01465-7190. 01465-7190. We'll take your call. Hello, good morning. Apologies, do call us back if that was you. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Marianne.
Good morning. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Rita.
Rita, go ahead.
Yes. What I want to ask you, Marianne, is looking at this view, is it going to say that the last election was like free and fair from your viewpoint?
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for calling.
Thanks. So, look, I mean, we've said this. We've congratulated the president-elect. We've seen the parallel voter tabulation numbers that have been published and so on. So we know that there are some irregularities that people have pointed out and concerns. They'll be tested in the courts. But, you know, we work with the elected government of the day, and I think it's really important for people to engage in the process in that way. So we don't make comments like free and fair, to be honest. What we look at, I guess, is the credibility of the process overall, and that's what we see, to be honest. But the court will judge and assess against the challenges that have been made.
Okay. All right, let's take another call. Hello, good morning. Apologies. Well, we have somebody calling us on Skype. If you want to call us and you're outside of the country, we're at Nigeria Info on Skype. So go ahead and join the conversation. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. What's your name? Where are you calling
good
from?
Good morning. The number one question I want to ask.
You're not going to tell me your name.
Joy, sorry.
Joy, go ahead.
Thank you. The number one question I want to ask him, how many percent did he give the past election? And again, all this election we have been doing in this country, why are they supporting it that is only little regularity? This kind of election, they cannot accept it in their place. Why are they not supporting it in our side? This past election was a zero for me. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Joyce.
Strong comment, Joyce. I understand your concerns. No, look, I mean, I think, as I say, it's democracy is a journey. And I think there were definitely problems and challenges with the election on the 25th. And I know INEC are working hard to address them before the 18th. But it's the overall credibility that has to be looked at. I guess that's what we see. Mm. But we're very committed to working with Nigerian civil society, with INEC, with others to try and improve against some of the irregularities that we're seeing. And I think it's important that there are improvements.
Okay. Patrick Odige is calling us on Skype. Patrick, where are you calling us from? Good morning.
Yes, good morning. My name is Patrick. I'm calling from France.
All right, go ahead.
Is there any possibility of my asking a question apart from politics?
Okay. Can he ask any other
Absolutely.
Question?
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to ask a question. The question is, the visa application for people going to UK for study, and the UK giving the visa to the mother and leaving the children behind. Why is that possible?
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Patrick.
Sure. So hi, Patrick, if you're still there. So when it comes to visa applications, we do permit dependents to go with parents, and that's still the case at the moment. Many dependents do. Some parents choose not to do that, actually. Choose to go and to have their children cared for a time and so on. So it's not impossible to go to the UK with your dependents if you wish to study. But all visa applications are judged on their merits. They're all individual because people travelling are individual. So we have to look at the circumstances of each person, each family in that way. And we do.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all kind
Definitely not one-size-fits-all. No, I mean, every circumstance is different. But the rules permit people to travel with their family if they wish to.
Okay. All right, back to the phone lines. Hello, good morning.
Hello.
Good morning. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Agu Omar. I'm calling from Lagos.
All right, Agu, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Ben.
Good morning.
You are very much aware of the magnitude of youth, especially from sub-Saharan Africa, trying to migrate to Europe, America, and Asia in search of greener pastures. So many of them have gotten drowned in the Mediterranean Sea or die in the desert. It's been an economic burden or even a moral burden to you guys in Europe. And I ask, is it preventable? Yes, I think it is preventable. And who can prevent it?
Okay.
You guys in Europe, you are colonial master. You have a great responsibility in saving the life of these people. This conspiracy of silence, by not saying what you saw, you're an observer here of the election that took place on 25th and many other African countries. By playing this diplomacy of silence, being economical with the truth as to what exactly took place here, does that help?
Okay.
Saving the lives.
So what is your question? Because we need to move on.
My question is, they should come to the rescue of the people. You don't side with political fuel.
Okay.
There are over 200 million Nigerians that are crying out.
I'm still waiting for your question, sir.
You should be on the side of these people. Thank you.
All right. I was hoping for a question in there. But before I let you, Ben. The UK government is responsible to the citizens of the United Kingdom. Their job here is purely diplomatic. I just want us to understand that, because you keep saying they need to come to the aid of the people. They're not our government. But go ahead, Ben.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I think firstly, we have called out irregularities that we've seen around the election on the 25th, and we're talking about the need for improvement before the 18th. So I think we have been clear about that, and we've worked with civil society. Indeed, we supported civil society observers themselves. So it wasn't just us observing, we supported people to observe, and we're very keen to make sure the process is continually improving. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of migration, you know, any death is a tragedy. So anyone who dies in the Mediterranean or wherever they're traveling from, it's a tragedy. I think the key thing is to try and address the reasons why people are leaving, and certainly people leaving those desperate situations. And some of the work we're doing on economic development and growth here in Nigeria is intended to try and make sure there are jobs, opportunities, really good jobs as well, that mean people don't need to or want to leave. And I think that's where we can add value and change things.
Mm. Somebody here says, good morning, Marianne. If British and the US really want to help Nigeria and some African nations, let them advise INEC chairman to cancel the last presidential election. Abubakar sends us that message. This one says, I just want to ask your guest, what is his take on... Oh, come on. I'm sorry. I can't ask you that question.
You can ask me any question you want.
No. Because it doesn't concern you. You're not a member of a political party. He's asking about your take on a particular party's ticket, but it's not for you. So I'm just going to skip that. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, my name is Chichi.
Chichi, go ahead, please.
To be honest with you, I don't think the guest you have there is actually being facts with his answers. The way he has been answering, well, obviously he's been economical with the truth. We all saw what happened during this last election, and we all believe that a particular candidate won.
Mm.
But that does not mean that he will be there and he's lying to our face. Obviously, they can't take this kind of issue in their country. It's not possible. He doesn't work for Nigerian government. All he needs to do is to say the truth the way it is. Telling the truth does not stop you from being who you are. You are working for another country, your own country. It's working in your system. Why do you guys not want it to work in our own system? Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Chichi, for calling. Ben?
Thanks. Well, Chichi, I mean, I am telling the truth. We did see irregularities. We were concerned about them. We're concerned about seeing that they don't reoccur on the 18th. But we look at the overall process of the election, the overall credibility. That's what we see. So, I mean, if we met, I would tell you honestly, I'm telling the truth. I'm telling you what I saw.
If you meant. Okay, I'll take one last call from Ayodele, who's calling us from Skype here, and then we'll just do some final talking before I let you go, Ben. Hello, good morning, Ayodele.
Hello, Marianne. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning here. Yeah, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Where are you calling us from?
I'm calling from Texas.
Go ahead.
Now, I just want to chip in. I'm not asking questions. I heard what people have been saying to your guest there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what the heck is wrong with Nigerians? This man is not a Nigerian. He can't bring his government to come and help us in our election. People should get it straight. Nigeria is a sovereign country. It's a sovereign state.
Mm.
Nigeria is not colonized any longer by the British. We have our own government to deal with any problem, any internal problem we have. Mm. Election is our internal problem, and we're going to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't come on national radio and tell someone who's from another country to come and been accused him of alleging of being economical with the truth. What do they want him to say? They want him to abuse the Nigerian government? Oh, come off it. You guys need to call these people and let them know the reason, or okay. Let them know, be aware that Nigeria is a sovereign country.
Okay.
Nigeria is no longer being colonized by the British again.
Ayodele, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate
it.
Thank you very much for calling, because we do not have time. I'm glad that you also had to chime in, because, you know, I had to make it clear that, you know, as much as we partner with the British government and, you know, other governments, they're governments of their own people. They're not necessarily coming here to tell us what to do, far be it from them. They can only advise us on what they think can help us, but they can't come and arm twist INEC or the government. But Ben, I want to say thank you so much for being here in the studio and being very patient with us.
No, at all. It's a pleasure. And I just, you know, I'd encourage all parties, all people involved in the election to follow the process, follow the court process. And I think that's really, really important. And I think we would like to see people come out and vote safely, but come out and vote and make the 18th a still better experience for people. Because we really, really think, you know, Nigeria's journey of democracy is not an end. It's very much the beginning. It's really, really important. It's a process. Yeah.
Yes. And will you be observing on?
We will
on
be.
The
I will be as well. Yeah.
All right. Well, Ben Clewin Jones.
Excellent.
Clewin Jones is the British Deputy High Commissioner here in Lagos, and it's been a pleasure. Come back sometime soon.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here. All right, Lagos, thank you so much for being part of the conversation this morning, and this is where we drop the curtains. Don't forget, follow Nigeria Info on all of its platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter, MIMIEY, or just search for Marianne Dukakon everywhere else. And don't forget, at 10 is What's Up Lagos, but at 9 we have Jimmy Disu coming into the studio in just a minute. I'm Mary Anacone. Have a beautiful Friday.
I want to assume that you would run because I want to give the listeners context for the conversation.
In 2019, you were running mate to Atiku Abubakar. What did you learn then that you will not repeat this time?
Yes, when is the president coming out to address us?
There's a few things. One, I have a burden and a passion for young people.
The fact that you have elected a man does not mean then you begin to order him around. The president will do whatever is good for the country at any given time.
Mr. Adesina, isn't the president responsible to the people?
What should the next president do to root out stakeholders who are complicit?
You fire those that need to be fired are fired.
It's looking like a brand new Chelsea, attacking with so much fluidity. Now what can you say about that, Martin? I know you follow Chelsea quite closely.
I live close to the Chelsea training ground. That's what you mean by that. I'm not